vision and member. Chair, first let me say some few things and then I will the chair allow me to come with a proposal to the report informed by the official agenda of today. Chair, first I want to say is that in front of your good self you have a colorful copy that was distributed this morning. I want to apologize in that we had forwarded a first copy, I think, a day or two ago. Then we started the assumption that it is made. But the contents are, to a large extent, the same. That's what the apology I want to make. And number two, Chair, we have presented your good self and the members with a strategic plan that is in front of everybody. I'm mentioning it, Chair, because what is contained in the strategic plan actually talks a lot to their presentation that we may make today, but it's well explained in this strategic plan. Number three is I want to make a proposal, if the Chair allows it. Being informed strongly by the agenda, let's say it's under NPA, financial overview by the National Director of Constitution, questions and answers, which means then that we should give much time to the budget issue. It looks like room was not made for the other presentations that we have included. Now, the proposal I want to make, Chair, is that we shall deal with bullet number one as their presentation. The reason being that some of the committee members are new members. I feel obliged to take them through what the APA is and what it stands for, as well as the establishment thereof. And thereafter, Chair, we do not, if you allow, we do not make the presentations as they are. The presentation was going to consist of a report from various business units, that is NPS, DSO, AFU, SOCA, SSCU, and the like. It is quite a bulk. It is quite bulky. I like that. Oh, then we will go directly to SOCA. That after bullet number one, then maybe Chair, if the Chair agrees, we pause and then we can take questions from the floor on any of the presentations included here. If there are no questions, then we'll go to, as directed by the agenda, we'll go directly to the budget. That's the promotion. Thank you. Thank you. Chair, first I want to take the membership through the NPA, its establishment and what NPA is made up of. Our Chair again advise members, not because it is what I'm going to refer members to is colorful than what is before you, but it is really nice to look at. To look at the strategic plan on page 11. On page 11 of this, that's what I'm going to touch it. 11 follows a page where you see a very handsome person immediately thereafter. This is what I'm talking about. On page 11. Chair, the NPA has got it on purpose.
Are we using the slides or the other
slides? No, we're not going to use their slide, Chair, on the basis that the Chair has agreed to that point. Chair, on the agenda, or certainly the vision of the NPA, which I want to think that most members are aware of, that is the justice in our society, so that people can live in freedom and security. The mission is also in there, included here. But what is of importance, since we are presenting for the first time, your portfolio committee is what follows on slide number four, that is the values of the NPA. The NPA decided to say for good governance is good and clean governance, we need to have our own values that we shall adhere to in the running of the organization. We decided on five values which were launched recently with approval of the then Minister of Justice. The five values that we have decided upon here after a very long process, I think it took about a year for us to finally come to the five values, the value of integrity, accountability, service excellence, professionalism, as well as credibility. Chair, I did not talk to them. They are quite self-explanatory, especially given the core function of the NPA. Those values are of the utmost importance in directing us in our day-to-day work. As far as the structure and chair is concerned, I go through the strategic plan that will be on page 11. Chair. I make use of the one in the strategic plan because therein you have the benefit chair of the name of incumbents in those various portfolios. Right at the top it is the office of the NDPP. In short form, it is indicated that the current NDPP is acting. And then inside the office of the NDPP is got a special director. Within the office of the NDPP, also an acting person. And we have four deputy national directors. That is the head for GSO, the head for NPS, the head for AFU, and the head for NSD, as well as the chief executive officer. All these members at the top share, including, you know, all these members at the top, including the NDPP, they form what you call the EXCO of the NPA. Starting with the DSO chair, in the DSO we currently have an acting head of DSO. Since you all know, chair, that the then head of DSO, Advocate Leonard McCarthy, has since left the NPA. And then we now have an Advocate Zinyati, William Zinyati, who is sitting right across here, chair, who is at the same time the acting head of the NPS, but I will come to that. He is now currently the head of DSO, and these are the people who are now reporting to him. That is the investigating director, Mr. Wengwe, the head of Gauteng, the head of KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, Western Cape, and the Free State. These people, chair, they are located in the various provinces, whereas they carry out the functions and obligations of the DSO under the directorship of Advocate Zinyati. So you remember, in terms of the NPA Act, the office of the DSO is located, or the DSO is located in the office of the NDPP. Then I move, chair, to the head of NPS. There again you see Advocate Zinyati also acting there. He's acting in two capacities. The reason why he is acting there as head of NPS, NPS is the largest unit in the NPA. The NPA is, one can put it this way, the NPA actually exists because of NPS. Now, Advocate Zinyati is actually the DPP in the Northern Gauteng. But because of my being made to act in the office of the NDPP, he was then appointed to act as the head of NPM. Now, he has DPP, the Director of Public Prosecution. They are located in all provinces except the province of Limpopo and the province of Mpumalanga. Those two provinces still report to the DPP office in Tshwane or in Pretoria. So it's only in those two provinces where you don't have DPP. But in all other provinces, we have the DPPs whose names are also mentioned on this page. Then you have the head of AFU. that is asset forfeiture, unit. I did not respond at the time when he said apologies. It joined my mind later that the advocate, that Mr. Will Hofmeyer is not present today. I asked him not to come because he's busy with the relocation of the DSO looking into the final judgment. That is why he is not here. And then also AFU has got its own regional offices, and then the companies there are also making that. Unfortunately for AFU, it has not been located in all the provinces like the position is with the NPS. It is only found, AFU is only found in Johannesburg, Western Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, Pretoria head office, as well as Eastern Cape. Then, sir, we move now to the head of NSSD, National Special Services Division. Now that is headed by Dr. Salas Ramaite, who is sitting next to Advocate Nyati. He is in charge of those units mentioned under him. That is Doka in the chair has interest. The chair will be chosen later. Then you have the head of the Office of Witness Protection. Actually that chair, if we have to be strict about the Office of Business Protection, it belongs under DOJ, not NPA. That said, it has been located within the NPA, but the contemporary thereof is that of the DG of Justice. And then you have the head of the SCCU, the Special Commercial Crime Unit. And then you have the head of PCLU, that is the Priority Crime Investigation Unit. In the presentation, Chair, they mentioned what their functions are fully inside this presentation. Then, Chair, we move to the Chief Executive Officer, also an acting incumbent. That is Dr. Kosa DV, who is sitting next to me, Chair. I had to out you from Department of Justice. Of course, with the benevolence of the DG, they allowed him to come and assist in the NPA. As you can see, Chair, he has people who report to him as well. The district manager of IRU, that is Integrity Management Unit. And then we'll talk to one of the venues that they are just referred to at the beginning. We have the district manager, Finance. The acting chair is outdated. He is no more acting. He is now being appointed. Then we have the district manager, Communication, who is also present in the hearing. That is manager, strategy and risk, who is still active. All of these members, Chair, are present in this room. Then we have the office of the deputy CEO, which post is currently vacant, and the deputy CEO is in charge of corporate services. It is vacant, but at the moment for purposes of governance, we have a person, we have also requested from the DOJ to assist in matters that fall within the office of the CEO, or the deputy CEO. Under that, we have the H human resource. It is no more vacant, it has not been filled by the lady who was introduced this morning, Ms. T.D. Matilde Somudise, executive manager IMSC, it is still vacant. The Executive Manager of Security and Risk is not acting, he is now being appointed. And then the Executive Manager of Research and Policy, which is still vacant. Chair, that is, in a nutshell, what pertains in the NPA. And Chair, we are an organization made up of, I think, 3,200 something members at the moment. Yeah, the total establishment, sorry, I was wrong here. The total establishment is now 3,908, but the number of posts available, excluding the DSO, is 4,963, which means that we still have to fill up vacant posts to the tune of 1,055. Our current vacancy rate is 22%. At one stage when the DG Justice was making a presentation, there was a question as to what are they doing about the stealing of the phones. And they perhaps right away offer that explanation that we have a process that is going on in terms of the recruitment of people into those posts. And we have put together a very robust process in filling up this post. And at the same time, in filling up the post, we have chaired what we refer to as the Aspirant Prosecutor Program. Now, that is a program where the members or people who qualify from university get appointed when they are fresh from varsity. They get appointed to be placed on training as aspirant prosecutors. And they get trained. At the moment, we still train them for a period of 8 months. But we envisage that in no time it will be extended to a period of 12 months. Now, while training them, they get some kind of a stipend. Those are not ministers of religion, but they do get a stipend. This has been increased. How much is the stipend? Yeah. They get a stipend just for them to be able to travel from home to office. And at the end of the 6 months or the 7 months, they are now tested again. And if they pass the test, then they qualify to be appointed permanently. That is another way of filling up this post. Although this does not really address our issues as much, because they come at the bottom of the levels that are in the that will be at level 4 right down there. And when we put them in there, they sit there to wait to be taken up to the regional court level and the like. But inside, that is D1, D2, D3, I'm talking here of regional court, high court procedures and the like, we have not as yet reached that stage where we can say we are able or we have succeeded in putting members from outside the NPA into those levels. But like I said, Chair, we have put together a robust process that is looking into filling up this post even at senior levels if we can find people outside the NPA. One of those vehicles that we intend using is the what is included in the OSD. There is a level called level 10. Level 10 where we refer to the incumbents there as, shall I call them, court animals. Now there you are able not to attract even practicing advocates or even practicing attorneys who are good at criminal law, because remember our business is around criminal law. So we've decided that in LG10, that's level 10, the salary must be a salary that will be able to attract people from outside into the NPA. Otherwise, if we do not do that, you're going to have vacancies always in the higher levels, because we're only able to fill them down there as they come out of the university. So that is, in a nutshell, what the NPA is about. Okay? And like I suggested, and this has been agreed to by the chair, I will pause here and see if there are members who may want to ask questions on any part of the presentation that is in there. And then in the absence of which we shall move them to the bench of the day, that is, that will be the budget. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, sir. I see hands are reaching up on it. Let me just make a comment that I'm very concerned about the IT sector. So there's instability in the region. So we are going to have to sort that out quickly. I think this committee needs to prioritize the implementation of NPA. What is at the core of our criminal justice system? So, it's just an observation. We can't just have security. So, we must move forward to that. Anyway, let me just get.
Chief, how are you?
Yeah.
You are recognized?
Thanks. Yeah, maybe on that point, I mean, the nickname for the DSO was Scorpions. maybe the nickname for the NPA should be Hollywood, because everybody's acting. on a more serious note, vacancy rate, I mean, 22%, I think you said, you know, it really is unacceptably high. It's almost for every four posts, there are only three people in them. What I'd quite like to see what is your target vacancy rate? Is it going to be zero, or do you always anticipate a small vacancy rate? And when are you going to reach it? I find that, I mean, the main explanation you gave was a sort of internship program. I find that as a particularly satisfactory answer to resolving the whole problem, because I'm sure there are vacancies on all levels that may deal with entry-level vacancies. But what I'd like to know is, what is your target vacancy rate, and when are you going to reach it?
Thank you. I think I don't have to repeat too much the issue of vacancies, which is about roughly 25% in the current level. For an institution that has got multiplicity of challenges, because I know probably NBA would say we're not able to prosecute because the investigation took long, the information was not available, but I also think that there's a priority of responsibility for MPA to assist in the effective and efficient investigation with regard to the type of information they want, which helps them to actually reach a condition. So it calls for a priority of responsibility. So for you to be able to give that priority of responsibility, it requires an interaction with the investigation, what you call it, unit. So you need capacity to be able to do that work. So I don't think a structure like this, but at this stage of our democracy, it needs to be comfortable with the process of what was done. The second issue is, again, it's almost similar to what I raised, and I'll keep on insisting on this question, is that I don't understand why do we call crime prevention and public safety, organized crime, improving effectiveness and whatever, as strategic goals. I think at some stage that we need to engage in this issue. Because this is a core function of what we call the compliance of this unit. Yet a strategic goal is a particular target at any given point in time that you want to achieve. And then, again, what is it that we're trying to talk about here? And if you need to go to your measurable, what you call objective, things like you contribute to reducing the incentive for crime, improve the capacity to deal with whatever. Why do we call those measurable? Because my understanding of these issues is that when you articulate them, you are defining a state in which you want to find yourself at any given point in time. But the way these things are articulated, these are actions of what is going to be done. And then under that, the heading is measurable, what we call objectives. And then here you say strategic goals and the issues are core functions of the department. And what I'm trying to emphasize what I'm saying is that I think we need to, this language of planning, we need to revisit it strongly, because the purpose, I repeat, of sitting us here and portfolio committees is to engage with you effectively. That whenever I look at this, when we meet in 3 months' time, what is it that I actually tell you on whether you're progressing or not? If I look at this, I cannot use them, because they don't assist me to tell me in 3 months' time, where will you be, in 6 months' time, where will you be? They don't assist me at a strategy level. I know there will be detailed business plan, but it needs to be articulated in the year at a strategy level that gives me an indication that when we meet in a year's time, we'll be able to say we think the NPA is doing its work. And I want to repeat to you the will disagree with me if you so wish, but my understanding of those are core functions. And I do not believe that they fit under a term of strategic goals. If you think I'm wrong, you will raise that. And again, I repeat this other one that you say, but also these are things that you say you will be doing, you will be doing. But it doesn't define the state at which you want to find, so that we can be able to move with you along this path towards that state, so that we can show that it's a effective competence. I would be interested to hear on this one. I don't believe that anybody would have to tell me this question in a more what to call satisfactory manner. Other comments? Questions? That is it. My turn to respond.
If I may respond, we don't have an issue to the question of vacant. Today, this year alone, we have made 582 appointments, and we have already advertised about 600 people. I can say that particularly with regard to corporate services, I think in September, all the senior positions, and with regard to all other vacancies, I can say that we are looking at achieving, at least by January next year, we should have a vacancy rate at a very reasonable rate of 10%, moving from the existing rate.
I'm not too sure
about when you look at that number, about 1,000 and we have advertised it on the other place, the process of advertising, I think it will be mainly interest for which we have additional money.
See, I'm not sure why you need to
post this advertising. You know, the post is vacant, you need someone to finish. So you advertise to get something. I'm not sure what the process is for having to, for having to think about how you're going to advertise. I mean, presumably they're not new posts, they're existing posts. So I really don't understand why, it's just over half only. Why they're not all being advertised, or almost all of them. If there are new posts, maybe there needs to be greater creativity over the adverts. But I'm sure you'd agree that most of those posts, the vast majority, probably 1,000 at least, if not more of the 1,055, are existing posts. Why can't they be advertised all in one go?
If I may explain, I think one of the delays on our part was the verification of the which is new finalized because of your contract. Our establishment, or the NPA establishment. We have concluded that process, and I think in the next 2 weeks we should be able to advertise the number of books. We concluded it. No, I think part of it we concluded. This is June, end of May, I think, after the conclusion.
Okay,
I
without the weight of the commission culture, I think the key word is that if there is full support in this one, we did an aggressive move to fill the room. Because their functions were supposed to have been performed a long time ago. So I think that is a premise. We should actually minimize any grounds for justifying why. I hear the people saying that the desire would be to come at the end of the financial year with a 10% vacancy rate. But whilst we would like to get to that point, Chair, I think there are a few challenges that need to be placed on record here to the committee as well. Our biggest challenge in the NPA is that we've got a big difficulty attracting people from the outside to get into the NPA.
The NPA, if you look at it hierarchically, it lends itself to people sitting in the high echelon from the bottom. So the position that has been advertised now in your lower to mid management level, and they get filled in by people who get promoted from the bottom. Now, from the bottom tier, we are a little bit comfortable because we've got a constant fit associate, which is the aspirant procedure program. In this aspirant procedure program, there are 10 centers in the country with 10 aspirants per center. So that group is your sure fitter into the lowest rank of the organization. But as soon as they come in, the people who are in level 4, C4 or C5, those are the people who are going to be appointed to this vacancy that I think the member is talking about. So while we are constantly able to appoint people into vacant positions, our vacancy percentage does not change much because we refine the people inside the organization. The biggest challenge is to get people outside of the organization to increase the number of warm bodies getting into the NPA. Now, there are a few strategies that advocates have alluded to in that regard. One other thing that we have been talking about and have not moved significantly is to make it possible for university graduates to apply to the MPA while they are still in school. In other words, the position that we have now is that our assets require somebody to be a graduate before they apply. Which means that a person who is a final year law graduate this year can only apply to the NPA in February or January of next year. Which is a difficult for us because there is a pool of people that we can be tapping on. Apart from getting them into the aspirant program, but to apply for your middle management, or rather for your higher positions at level 5, because at university chair, you are targeting, if you like, the better crop. There are at university some sharp students that you can appoint directly without maybe having to go through the aspirant program, or to also attract people who are already in professions like the legal profession doing actions and so on. So what one needs to do now in order to impact on this vacancy is not only to focus on promoting our own people, because that matters to the vacancy, is to get a significant infusion of fresh blood. And you can only get that by not relying on the aspirant program. I think it's important to mention that because we will come here in 6 months and we will have filled the position that Dr. Dizier is talking about. But the vacancy rate will not have moved because it would have meant that you promote a different court procedure to the regional court and that regional court procedure to the high court.
Stating the point, I think the bottom line is that the vacancy rate of 22% is unacceptably high, and it needs to. I mean, as my colleague has said, those posts are by being for. The money provided for it, those posts need to be filled, and that's basically the bottom line. I mean, with respect to the advocate's explanation, I mean, if you advertise a post and you find that there aren't any suitable people, then that's fine. You can then explain that, okay, we tried to get somebody, but you couldn't. But you're not even advertising. That's the problem. You know, 1,055 posts vacant, 683 adverts. I would have thought you don't have to potentially take from yourselves. You could get advocates from the bar, attorneys from private practice who involved in criminal work. I mean, I'm sure there's people out there, but really I would find the explanation more acceptable if you had said we tried, we advertised and nobody came, rather than we didn't advertise at all. But I think that the point we should be making is that those we have those posts, we are one of the government priorities is an effective criminal justice system. For an effective criminal justice system, we need enough prosecutors. And those posts must be filled bottom line. And then also, Dr. Devee said, 10% by January. African Zinyati has changed that to the financial year, so you already moved it forward to April. But I think basically bottom line is those posts need to be filled. One of the things, I know it's not NTA, but just by way of an example, the Master in the High Court in New Maritzburg, he retired. I know it's not NTA, but I suspect the same is happening there. So it's not as though it's a sudden death, he doesn't drop dead and the post is saying. He gives his notice, he says February's retiring. And the post is only advertised after he left. Now, I don't understand that. And I suspect that may be happening in the NPA. The person may say, okay, I'm leaving, I'm retiring, I'm going somewhere else. And those adverts should be put out immediately.
Before I move to the next issue, I just want to, obviously, the view of the committee here is that we need to advertise. Secondly, I'm very much attracted to the issue of the concept of the magistrate. That means the how of the government, including identifying the right kids there in the university, assigning practicing prosecutors to mentor them while they're in there. So you don't wait for them to graduate. So you partner them with the prosecutors to make those relationships. Obviously, those prosecutors will need to be paid for mentoring something about what they're doing, about their normal things like that. So I think we must explore this sort of possibility. So that when that person is sitting there, they know I'm a prosecutor. But when he lives there, or he lives there, goes straight into the service at the level that we see who are looking at, looking forward to what they're doing.
Thank you, sir. Sir, the one thing that maybe I should mention here, especially because of the remarks by Jimmy Jenny, to say that when we say 22%, we're referring to posts that are funded as well as non-funded posts. That's why they pushed it to 22%. But if maybe we remove the unfunded post, I think the percentage will go down. Now the next question may be, why do you have those unfunded posts on your establishment? The reason here is that these are the posts that were created in the past and they were allocated, but you do not have the necessary funding. Now we felt that as NPA we may need these posts in future. If we get rid of them completely, the process that is going to change to have those posts again. So the 22% is not only posts that are funded, both funded and unfunded. But of course, it does not make the picture likable by yourself, because it still says you will still have an invasion to raise. I want to comment again on the issue, which is that do you foresee a stage where we get a zero vacancy rate? I need to be practical about this here, that in the NPA I do not envisage that happening. One of the reasons was mentioned by the Chief of Justice that as soon as the magistrate salary goes up, once they say magistrate salaries have gone up, I know I'm going to lose a number of prosecutors in the middle management, and by that I'm referring to FGT, senior public prosecutors. they leave, they go to the bank. So it becomes a recurring dismal all the time.
So I would like to ask you to use this to point to the company.
So if I can respond, I can just first just start by saying that if you look at page 37 of our strategic plan, we do have set targets on the vacancy rate that the organization is hoping to decrease. And you'll see there's a three-year target. It goes from 20% for the financial year it's busy with right now, then 18 and 12%. So we do have set targets that we're hoping to work towards as an organization. But if I can just quickly try to explain our strategic plan, what you have on the board there is what we try to do is to develop a strategic framework through which we can, in a single slide, explain the whole strategy of our organization. And we welcome the comments that you've given us. So we've got three strategic goals, and we understand that it is an end state, a desirable end state that we as an organization would like to achieve. And the three desirable end states that we would like to have is excellent service delivery, excellent governance, and adequate resources in our organization. It's on page 18 of the strategic plan. So if I can explain, we can't set it out there as our framework. We've got three end goals or end states that we would like to see in our organization. What we've then said is which of our sub-programs that we have will contribute to each of the strategic goals. As you can see set out there, we say that sub-program 1, 2, 3, and 4 will all try to contribute to ensuring that we have excellent service delivery. Excellent governance is something that all sub-programs need to contribute to, and that is why it runs across all of them. As far as our support services sub-program, the newly created sub-program is concerned, it needs to contribute to our strategic goal, making sure that we achieve adequate resources, and that's in the broader spectrum of resources that we require as an organization, as people, IT, infrastructure, everything that you require to be able to deliver. Next we have there our measurable objectives. And what we mean by measurable objectives, it means it is the objectives that we seek to achieve through strategy, which you'll see next to that, that are linked to your strategic goal. And by measurable, we're saying that is what you can measure us on, because otherwise the strategic goal becomes a pie in the sky, it's something you can't touch. But once you put measurable objectives to it, that's where we will measure you. If you then look within each sub-program, we've broken it down to actually give targets for each of those measurable objectives. And I will take you through that so you can see. And that's where you can hold us accountable. We tell you for each of those measurable objectives which targets we will achieve over the next 3 years, and that is what we will bring back to you each year, and that is what we will report to you on when we come back here. We then also link our strategies. We say that for that measurable objective that is linked to that strategic goal, these are the strategies that we will employ. And then if you go to that sub-program, you can read detail about what that strategy entails, what is the stuff that we're going to be doing. Below our strategic plan, we have very, very detailed annual plans. So for that sub-program, there's public prosecutions, which consists of NTS, TCLU, SOCON, SECU. You will find a detailed annual plan in our organization that has even more flesh around what they will do in that strategy at an activity level, but not at the strategic level. We don't include that. So you will see that we will tell you that to get excellent service delivery, our first measurable objective is to increase the number of cases finalized successfully. And to do that, we are going to employ two strategies. And that's going to be to deliver a speedy quality prosecution within the prescripts of the law, of course, and we're going to build sound relations with our key partners and stakeholders. Because we recognize that the NTA in the middle of the value chain cannot ever try to increase the number of cases finalized without working with the judiciary, the legal aid board, DOJ, normal legal practitioners, etc., etc., DSC, DCS, etc. If I can take you to our strategic plan and just give you an example of how we break it down, you can go to page 26, which is a more detailed one for the NTS. or for the first step program.
I'd ask you to go through.
Okay.
But we have got a document which we have not read. So what is meant for the committee to go and do it for Mike? And then in our next meeting, we'll then ask questions and we inform ourselves. Again, I must apologize for not reminding members that we must switch off our phones. Thank you.
Thank you.
Essentially, it would mean that we have dealt with the first part as agreed upon, and we shall now go, go directly to the budget. I will allow the executive manager of finance to do that.
Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, with your permission, I would like to take it to slide number 6. It's the red handout, slide number 6. The 20809 expenditure outcome. Chair, with your permission, I would like to point out that these figures are preliminary and unaudited. We're going through the audit process currently, so this is just last year's figures. If I can take you at a high level, you'll see that we have spent 98% of our budget as previously reported by the DG. It's the third last column, expenditure as a percentage of the final appropriation, 98%. In rand terms, that relates to 39 million rand. We've fully expended our compensation of employment budget. That's the first line on top, compensation of employees, as well as personal services, that's 100% or 99.9% spent. We underspent on machinery and equipment to the tune of 53 million rand. You'll see that it's the second last line, 53.665 million rand. Chair, that was the consequence of the late award of the bid for furniture for the inner courts in Johannesburg, as well as forced savings to cover possible overspend on goods and services. In this regard, we held back invoices totaling for public work, we held back one for 15 mil, as well as a government grant invoice of 6 million rand. We were sitting with savings on the wrong economic classification, and we couldn't therefore proceed and pay those invoices in time. We were also constrained by the environment rules, and that's why we had this underspend of 39 million rand for the 20809 financial year. So you'll also notice that there was a environment of 3.7 million rand to the justice vote to cover possible to cover the overspend on compensation on justice on the justice vote. So if I then can go to slide number 7, the next slide, it's the EME allocation for economic classification for the 2009 to 10 financial year, so it's the current financial year, not the past one. If you look at that, you'll see that there's a significant growth in the budget allocated for compensation of employees. You'll recall the discussion we just had about the number of unfunded and funded posts. The difference is about 300 million rand. That's 300 million rand, that's what we have in addition to what we had last year to fund unfunded posts in the current financial year. That translates to 643 posts. Obviously, we had to wait for the establishment verification to be finalised so that we could know which posts are there on the establishment. We now have to go through a process to identify which of those posts become unfunded and mark them accordingly on the PAFL system, which will have its own challenges. So I would also like to show to you that there's the split between compensation of employees and goods and services is roughly 50%. From our perspective, this place is strained on prosecutors, especially at the lower court level. We only have 50% to spend on them. Once we have a warm body, we can only pay 50% to make that person work. That means cell phones, accommodation, furniture, travel, that kind of thing. We don't have much a big margin to spend money on them there. You'll also notice, according to our budget allocation, that we have no capital works allocation. That money is on program 2. The DG has referred to that year. We also have an additional challenge in addition to the lack of funding, that we also do not have sufficient accommodation for prosecutors throughout the country. So even though we can appoint some of them, that means they'll have to share offices in some instances. And in Uganda and places like that, they already share 18 to an office, that kind of statistic. So if I can then go to the next slide, it's slide number 8. This is the budget breakdown for the current financial year according to sub-programs. I think the NDPT has referred to public prosecutions, and that it takes up the biggest slice of our pie. It's about 62% of our budget is allocated to our core business, which is prosecution. So then I would like to refer you to the Directorate of Special Operations, or the Scorpions. You'll notice that the E&E allocation, and it's not really evident from this year, if you look at the 208.09 here, the DSO had a bigger allocation, close to 400 mil. That has been reduced over the MTS period, and we will finalize the final transfers to SAP during the adjustment estimates later this year. So that's the process which we will follow. We are negotiating with SAP on the exact amount. There are three classes of personnel involved. It's the investigators, it's the prosecutors, as well as the admin and support staff. Now, their compensation budgets, the prosecutors will obviously remain with the MTA, as well as the admin staff. Under the investigators, there are those that have consented to transfer to SAP and those who will be given the alternative placement option. The alternative placement option will, where the function goes, the budget should go. And that's the principal agreement, but obviously the details will still have to be worked out, and we are negotiating that with SAP. So it's not a total function shift in terms of section 43 of the PSMA.
So are you not going to have a few months there without the funding for the
service? No, sorry, Chen. The budget is still with the MPA. The budget will remain with the MPA until the adjustment estimate is true. At this stage, we continue to pay those prosecutors until such time as they transfer to SAP. As when they transfer to SAP, we terminate them on our system, they then go over to the SAP system, SAP pays for them. Whatever remains of a DSO budget at the adjustment estimate will be transferred to SAP for this current financial year, but obviously it will have a carry-through effect, and the salaries of those investigators will follow them at SAP or at the SIU in future. And then the last line I would like to draw your attention to is on support services. You'll see that there's a rather big budget for support services, the 450 million rand. The support services, and there's another slide that comes just after this slide, number 9, that gives the detail of that. The support services, or the corporate services element, covers our centralized functions such as travel, fleet, IT, and security. We centralize those budgets, and that's not it was not allocated to the sub-program level. That's why it may seem rather high, but that's why it is, because we centralize certain functions there. If I can then go to slide number 9, Chair, it's the support services budget allocation. You'll see there's finance and procurement that shows a growth in these particular budgets. Finance and procurement budget has grown 9% is 9% increase. That's mainly to provide for additional lease commitments. Human resources got some additional funding to provide for some additional capacity to get our HR processes going quicker and so that we can speed up the recruitment processes. IT also got a significant increase. You'll see it's a 60% increase. They have been under budget for in the past, and we had great difficulty to pay our licenses and our IT commitments in the past, given this limited budget allocation. So the other increases in the support services budget is rather not significant. I think project management office is one of them that's a bit high, but we do our quarterly reviews. And during those reviews, we reprioritize budget on a continuous basis. Chairperson, I think from my side, unless you wanted to go into much more detail, which we can, I believe that should adequately cover the main issues for the budget presentation.
Two questions. We've got a disclaimer from the Auditor General. The report is in your annual report. I mean, it's page 63. And there's a whole lot of issues. Basis for disclaimer, irregular fruits and waste expenditure, problems with the tangible assets, leave entitlement, intangible assets, prepayments and advances, financial management, lease commitments, etc. Is there a response to the Auditor General's report as to how you are going to actually correct these problems? And if so, through your chair, can we get a copy of that response? That's one. Then number two, you raised the issue, I mean, linked to the previous question of space for prosecutors not having offices. Would that include Johannesburg as well? And if that's the case, I mean, what this whole problem with unit chambers, which is meant to cost $200 million to, according to the media, to fix. How did that happen and what's been done about it?
Other questions?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, if I can take you to slide number 11, also the red slide number 11, we dealt with the disclaimer of audit opinion there. It's indeed correct. We did get a disclaimer of audit opinion. Also in our CARA statement. If I can go to slide number 12, there's the steps that we have taken to address the audit outcome. We have a detailed audit action plan for both CARA as well as the MPA account, and we can gladly make that available shared to the committee. The rest of the steps are set out there. We have improved our systems and internal controls, we're refining process and procedure, we're training staff, we're engaging with National Treasury and the aging, and all those to get those irregular condones and that kind of thing, and we have instituted our investigations and disciplinary action as was highlighted in that report. So Chair, I believe from that side, to address the audit concerns, I would lie to the committee chair if I say to you that you should expect an unqualified audit opinion coming from disclaimers of this magnitude on the 08-09 financial year, but we're working towards that. That's what we're working towards, and we have no other option than to get an audit qualification. That's our ultimate aim at time and for the NPA as well. On the space for the prosecutor's chair, on the inner standard, the amount involved is 187 million excluding VAT. The question posed was how did this happen and what happened? Now, Chair, as we understand it, that there was the MPA bought the building 5, 6, 7 years ago. I'm not precisely sure when. For an amount of 50 million rands using CARA funds. That the building, the building was then transferred into the name of Public Works as the custodian of all government assets. When we put in the request for this particular building, we said to Public Works that we want this building free of any lease commitment. Just before the transaction was supposed to, just before the NPA was to start the refurbishment process, and there were issues about whether budget is available for the refurbishment process, the lease contract was renewed for a 5-year period. We were sitting with two tenants at the bottom of the building. It was a bank and a coffee shop. And because of their lease contract with the landlord or with that building, we could not start the refurbishing process. We were not allowed to disrupt the power supply, and you would appreciate then if you start building and breaking down walls and things on the top floors, that it will be very difficult to guarantee no lack of power supply to the particular building, or noise or dust and that kind of thing. Chair, this is all done through the public works tender processes, and the information we have is that things did not always go well there. The fact of the matter is that we need that accommodation, the inner court, inner chambers. We need inner chambers. The High Court is not going to go anywhere else. The High Court is going to remain in that where it is for at least the next 10, 15, 20 years. We have now moved into what is called the Inner Court, which is just across the street. We're leasing the Inner Court building, the Inner Court premises, at a cost of R1 million a month. That's more or less what it costs. So if I look at 200 mil for inner chambers, then my payback period is 10 years. So in 10 years time, after 10 years, we would be staying in that building, the inner chambers, for free. We have met with the Chief Director, Facilities Management of Justice, in order to try and find a solution last week, Friday. Chair, we'll have to make a plan. As I say to you, the High Court's not going to go anywhere. We need that accommodation, and unless we want to pay the landlords in the vicinity of our High Court forever and a day, we must just make a plan.
Look, I don't actually quite understand the explanation, I must say. I mean, I think, again, it would be useful to have something more detailed. I mean, I'm not sure, you know, you bought the building. You know, usually when you buy a property, you deal with the issue of tenants beforehand. You don't buy the building and then suddenly discover that there are tenants. So, you know, that doesn't make sense. And it seems from the explanation that the lease was extended. I don't know who then extended that lease.
Public
Works. But I mean, how could they, when you bought the building? Yeah, I mean, that doesn't make sense. I don't know if the bank and the coffee shop are still there. So when they moved out, I don't know why that was a single resolution to the problem. I don't know why you didn't then move in and start renovating. So there's a whole lot of questions that really don't make sense to me at all, and I think it would be useful to get a more detailed explanation, because really, I mean, from an expenditure point of view, when you've got, you own a building which was at the value of $15 million, and you're now renting a property across the road because you can't use that building, it doesn't make sense at all.
I was going to suggest that the member just said that you compile a detailed response and something to the commission.
That's what I was just suggesting, so that we can then, when we meet next week, we can then just come on the basis of that report.
Any other comment?
We are happy people.
The question is, when do we get the report? What is the process? Particularly around the
Thank
you very much.
Well, it seems like we are almost at the end of just one more suggestion around funding. This problem, if you think about it with the institution, you might want to think of boundaries for people who can. In other words, to extend the principle that we are using for students who have then you pressure them and you get them into conflict so that when they finish, there's a special sort of arrangement so that they can work for the MPA for certain periods of time and we tie them down. And, you know, we might want to think along those lines. is quite a major problem.
Chairperson, I just wanted to agree with you what you were saying now about students coming out of university and then going into becoming prostitutes. As it stands at the moment, and I see there's someone from a law society here to correct me if I'm wrong, but we are, you know, you can do certain things in lieu of doing articles, and one of them is you can do 6 months law clinic service at a university, and things like that, that the law society then takes as being part of your article, your clerkship. And maybe the MPA should look into dealing with the law society and see if they can't come up with some kind of tutorship program that could then count towards the articles, just like law school at legal aid clinics advantages count.
Let me try and summarize the issue now. Basically, I think we're done with the budget. The committee will prepare a report, so we will support the budget. There's a lot of work to be done going forward. And I think we're going to be meeting quarterly or something like that. Quarterly. And to look into the issues that will, ongoing issues, even the issues that we have done today, check what is going on. And, some of us have been initiated. The wife at the time, so we had a question. So say along those lines. And, but otherwise, we are going to have to work together and we'll be able to do some more, let's say more. We're going to push one another, we're going to be fighting and working in the same direction. Because we need to deliver quality justice system to our country. And from where I'm sitting, I'm going to offer my personal support.
Good.